Tango Tango Papa 1816, January 27, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from North Platte, Nebraska. So I am back at work. have been back, let's see, I was supposed to come back on, Saturday. But, so they dispatched a load on Saturday. So I took the trailer up and dropped it in at a place in Springdale. And they were going to load it later that evening, and then so I went back up there yesterday being Sunday morning, late Sunday morning. I went back up there and picked the loaded trailer up, and the first drop was yesterday afternoon at Clarksville, Arkansas. And then I drove, after I got away from Clarksville, I drove to the second drop, which was in Wichita, Kansas. And now the third and final drop is in the morning here at North Platte, Nebraska. So it's turned cold again. Right now here at North Platte, it's about 9 degrees. It's cold. It's certainly cold. But it, I don't know. I walked in the truck stop and walked back out a while ago. And I don't know, there is a little bit of wind, but not bad. There was a whole lot more wind last night. So, but in any case, it's supposed to get to -3 this evening, and then who knows what it's going to do after that. So there is no snow on the ground here at all. There might be a little bit where they had it piled up and it hasn't melted. But there, pretty much there's no, you know, all the snow that was whatever there might have been in Kansas, and then once I got into Nebraska, it's non-existent pretty much. So it's, like I say, the only place where you might see a little bit of it here and there is where they had, you know, the little tiny remaining piles of it that they might have had in some parking lots where they had it kind of scraped up in big piles. So in any case, while I was home, I hadn't really talked about it in the podcast. I ordered a few days ago, I ordered, it's called a Neat desktop scanner. And if you go to neat.com, the Neat offers, the Neat company offers a variety of products kind of centered around document scanning, storage, and so on and so forth. And this Neat scanner is an interesting device, because scanners, let's face it, scanners for quite a while now have been pretty inexpensive. You know, for a long time now, you've been able to buy scanners pretty cheaply, like especially the desktop variety. The Neat scanners are more expensive, and but they do more. They do more than simply scan, because they're, you know, this desktop, Neat desktop scanner that I got is combined with software. And I got the Mac version. There's also a Windows version that you can get, but obviously I got the Mac version. And it's a double-sided scanner. So whenever you scan, it's scanning both sides. It's very rapid. It scans very rapidly. And you can feed multiple sheets into it at once. Bigger sheets, receipts, and even business cards. And it will, for example, if it will extract information off of business cards and put it into a contact database, which is pretty slick. And, you know, there have been scanners that specifically do this for business cards for some time, but in this case, it's just built right into this one single desktop unit scanner. But then the other trick that Neat does is with the Neat software, and it employs optical character recognition in order to kind of it tries its best guess at categorizing. And so it keeps an image, but then it does optical character recognition to all of the text that it can find. And so after the fact, you can go ahead and organize and make your digital folders and what have you, that sort of the digital equivalent of a filing cabinet with your scanned document images, but it also is searchable. So the trick that it kind of performs is that it's also searchable. So if you can just remember a word or two, you search for the text, because all of the text has been ran through an optical character recognition process. So, it's a sort of dual database. It's a database not only of images, of scanned images, but it's also that are kind of put into a digital version of a filing cabinet, but it's also a database of text. So to make this thing useful, what you want to do is scan anything and everything. So the extra night that I was at home there Saturday evening, I went ahead and, I've got this... My filing system right now consists of, I've got a paper grocery sack, and I guess, I don't know if you can still get those anymore. I've got a couple of them, but the last time I was in there, there's this one store called Marvin's IGA that will still give you paper sacks if you want them. They give you a choice of paper or plastic, and this has been a year or two ago since I was in there, so they may have changed that by now. But in any case, I've got these paper sacks, and so I put everything in a paper sack. So I had about a year's worth of stuff in this paper sack, paper grocery sack, and kind of a heavy-duty paper grocery sack. And so I went through that, and this scanner is pretty high speed, and it makes it pretty easy. You feed it in at the top and press the button, the scan button, and you just keep doing that over and over again. And so I was able to make my way through that entire sack of stuff, a year's worth of stuff. And, and then the other trick that it can perform is that there's also Neat offers a cloud service. Now, you've got to pay for the cloud service. Whenever you buy a scanner from them, they give you a trial version of the their cloud service. The idea with the cloud service is that everything you scan into your computer gets sent to the cloud. So whatever digital filing cabinet and database that you have that you've made in the Neat software on your computer, that gets synced to your account in the Neat cloud. And then, for example, what I did, I did this on the one Mac Mini at home that I recently put the that I paid to have the 240 gigabyte SSD drive put into. I'm using that machine because it was, it's really convenient. I've got it in a corner of my living room, and so it's very convenient just to use it. So that's the one that the scanner is actually attached to. But so on this 13-inch MacBook that I'm recording the podcast on right now, I went ahead and installed the Neat software, and then obviously put in my Neat username and password, and it downloaded everything. But then there's a third trick that it can perform. I don't know if I'm really counting or not. But now this depends on the cloud, and you have to pay for the service. Now, of course, I've got a trial version going, and I'm probably very well going to end up paying for it, because I'm finding it to be pretty useful. They have an app, a mobile app. They've got an iOS version and as well as an Android version. Of course, I'm using the Android version on my phone, my Galaxy S3, the idea being you use the phone to take a picture of your receipts. Of course, the the, you know, the, you, if you, the megapixels in the cameras nowadays and the phones are, well, you know, they're very good. Those phones are good enough to take really good, you know, the equivalent of a document scanner. And so you take a picture of the receipt and it's very clear. And so then you just, you know, upload it to the whatever folder you want. You can put in whatever notes that you want. And once it's uploaded to the server, their server runs it through optical character recognition. And, you know, and it tells you if it's successful or not. If it's successfully uploaded or not. And then once it's up there, then of course you can come back later, either on the phone or on one of the, you know, the desktop version, and just kind of go through there and just organize and so on and so forth. And I'm still in the process of organizing because I scan between it was mostly in the evening after I got this thing, Saturday. And then the little bit I played around with it yesterday, I started taking pictures of receipts because I have this Walmart sack. There's a little plastic bag full of receipts, just stuffed in there, paper receipts from all these various places because I'm always eating out and so on and so forth, and I keep all the receipts. Got those all kind of stuffed in Walmart sacks or plastic bags. They're not necessarily Walmart sacks. But so started taking pictures of those. So between the scans and the pictures that I've taken of receipts with my phone, I'm probably well over upwards of 500 documents that I've either, you know, most of those were scans, and then some of them, a portion of them, probably 40 or 50 or pictures, you know, I took pictures, you know, while I was waiting to get unloaded. So, you know, and of course you can use the mobile version of the app. You can search and you can, you know, just as easily as you can do it on your, you know, or almost as easily as you could do it on a regular computer. Search and find things and bring things right up. And so you can, but the beauty of it is that you scan anything and everything that you get your hands on, and then you can you can either, you know, go ahead and file it, whatever. So I just put it back in the sack. And I got a whole year's worth. And usually about twice a year, I will find myself having to dig back through my sack. And I've been doing this for a few. I used to file all these into filing cabinets. And I kind of filled the filing cabinet up. And then after that, I just kind of defaulted to sack. Using a sack of some sort, paper bag. So, but in any case, this makes it very easy to find things. And obviously, the more stuff you have, the better it is, the easier it is. And you can just kind of scan anything, scan anything and everything that you think you might need, and then there it is. You got a copy of it. You know, and depending on what it is, you can either toss it or just put it, you know, like in my case, put it in a paper bag, and there it is, and then eventually I dispose of it. So pretty happy with that. Really pretty happy with the system. Now, you know, their software is not perfect. It's not perfect software. The software, at least the Mac version, has a few little quirks. And that's true with a lot of software. Like this program that I'm using right now to record this podcast with, Ubercaster, it's quirky. It's very capable. But what I've always found with software is that I like to play with it and then sort of find out how far I can push it, find out what I can do with it, what I can't. If once you know what you can do and you can't do, and what you can get away with and what you should avoid, you can really put software, depending on what it is, you can really put it to good use. And that is certainly true with Ubercaster, and it's absolutely true with this Neat, you know, the software that they offer. They do sell the software by itself, but it obviously it works best with their high-speed scanner. And of course that works with USB, and you either buy the Windows version, you know, you buy it, the scanner is the same obviously, you either buy it with the Windows software or the Mac software, the Mac version. So pretty happy with that purchase. So far I'm really putting this to good use, and I do think that I will probably go ahead and pay for their cloud, you know, one of the versions of their cloud service. I haven't quite decided yet which one, but probably will go ahead and do that, because I am finding it very useful to be able to do that. And I don't know, it's you know, a number of years ago, some of you may remember it, there was this company, and I don't even know if they're around anymore, it was called Visioneer. And they had these, and the idea was similar. They had a document scanner, you know, it was a kind of a long thing, and you would feed the page in, and it would grab it and suck it through. And the idea was that with their Visioneer software, that you could scan anything and everything. Now, it didn't have optical character recognition, but the idea was still, you know, create a digital filing cabinet. So Neat is doing that with the added benefit of running optical character recognition on everything, and making a sort of a text database out of it. And so you're kind of on the verge in between paper documents and digital documents, you know, because the two things are, you know, you got two distinct things, you know, paper and digital, but this sort of lives in between the two, you know, kind of in both worlds. It's got feet in both worlds, and as such, I can see where it's going to be very useful. If nothing else, it's just nice to scan all of these things and know that I always will have, you know, they're just right there and they're instantly available. The other thing, this Neat company has been around for, I don't know, several years, and this seems to be the only thing that they're doing. You know, now if this was a Microsoft thing, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, because Microsoft or HP or even Apple, those companies are notorious for sort of pulling things away. You know, they have a thing, oh, we're offering this. Microsoft did it. HP's done it. Oh, here it is. This is the great thing, and they're even offering it to business or whatever. And then we're supporting it and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, they just pull the plug on it. Sorry. Goes away. You know, and you poor suckers that bought into it, you're left holding the bag. So I think this Neat, I think they're going to be around for a while, and certainly the, you know, the software's here, and I'm, you know, I think they do upgrade it, but you don't have to upgrade the software. I don't know if there's a benefit to upgrading to the latest version of the software or not. I think that, you know, companies have a dilemma. They really do have a dilemma, you know, because they can, you know, especially a company that sells software, or in this case a hardware and software combination, or they will sell, and like I say, they will sell you the software by itself. They've got a dilemma, because you sell and you sell and you sell, and then at some point you kind of reach market saturation. Well, how do you get beyond that? Then comes the idea, oh, we're going to upgrade it, and then you have these endless upgrade cycles. Well, Neat, I think, has hit upon an interesting idea, in that they've got this cloud service, and if they, you know, if people are actually willing to pay for it, and I think they will, because it actually offers a real world benefit, and, you know, that if you take it all together, it is a real world benefit of having the things always available, but then also throwing in with the cloud service the, you know, depending on which version you buy, the ability to put, you know, input receipts from your phone into the same system. Use your phone as a scanner into the same ecosystem that you create, you know, your own personal database that you're creating and adding to. If they can, you know, get people to pay, then they've got money coming in every month, and then that kind of changes the equation. from, oh, we're going to constantly just push you with these upgrades, to we want to, this is a service, this is the type of service that we're providing, we're helping you do. We're in the business of helping you scan your documents and organize your life, and it sort of changes the dynamic a little bit. So I think that the thing will probably be around for a while. I'm not, you know, and it will work on this, you know, on the Snow Leopard version of OS X, and that's what I have on that Mac Mini at home. That's what I have on this machine, this 13-inch MacBook. And I have no plan, you know, I will not update it because Ubercaster won't run on it. And as long as I'm running, as long as I need to run Ubercaster, then I'm not going to be upgrading, because Ubercaster will not run on newer versions. And I think, I don't know, I was reading an article a while ago about Apple, and I think that Apple, you know, they're really kind of, they've been sort of resting on their laurels. Even with the iPad, the release of the iPad Air, I read this article. This guy was comparing the Kindle, this new HDX Fire, with the iPad Air, and he named over several things that the Kindle is actually better at than the iPad. And he had about five things that, you know, price and sound quality is much better on the Kindle Fire HDX. It gets much louder. It sounds much better. Of course, the iPad just, and I do have this complaint, it doesn't get very loud, and it, you know, the sound doesn't, it's just not loud enough in a lot of cases. You know, and what else? He had several other little complaints. But those were the, you know, those two that I just mentioned were the ones that kind of stuck out to me. So Apple, I don't know, Apple does seem to kind of be resting on their laurels a little bit, and I don't know. Well, you know, they're still enormously profitable, and they're still selling lots of devices, so, you know, we'll wait and see what happens. But I do think that they are being sort of, you know, the market is kind of being flooded from the bottom. And I just started listening to a new audiobook today, and it's what is the name of it? It's The Big Bang, and, you know, and it's talking about innovator's dilemma, you know, and how innovations happen, disrupt, and it's specifically about disruptive innovations. And one of the things that they're talking about is that, you know, what can end up happening, one of the ways that, you know, something comes along that's kind of cheaper, but it's inferior, and, you know, so the bigger players in the market will ignore it. But then, you know, they ignore that at their peril, because inevitably, if the, you know, there's a market for that, the thing will continue to improve, and before you know it, it's taken over the market. And then, you know, and if that original company that was, you know, that was just, was kind of ignoring it like it was a little, you know, a little fly somewhere, you know, swat at it, they all of a sudden they find themselves in real trouble. And of course, that's happening ever more rapidly, and, you know, in this information age, as our communications, you know, the technology always gets better, faster, cheaper. As that happens, these waves of innovation are, you know, they're coming faster and faster and faster. Even to the point, you know, where they're arguing in this book that the process of innovation itself is being disrupted. So I just started listening to that this evening, and it's quite an interesting book. The only thing I have against it is that in this particular one, Audible is usually pretty good about finding really good narrators. I don't know if that's a process that Audible does, or if that has, you know, maybe the sometimes the the people that write the book themselves, the authors, publishers may have something to do with that. This particular one, the narrator, I don't know the guy's name, the guy that's narrating this book that I'm listening to now that, about the disruption, he's kind of annoying. He's got an annoying way of talking, you know, his speech pattern is rather annoying. So But, you know, I can kind of overlook that. It is an interesting book. It's called The Big Bang, something about the Innovator's Dilemma. And it's quite interesting. It's just, I'll just warn you up front that the narrator of this book is a little bit annoying. You know, I'm finding him to be a little annoying. And that's usually not the case. Usually with Audible, you get really talented professionals doing the narration. As, you know, virtually always. This is the first time I've had one that I found really kind of annoying. So, you know, and of course, your mileage may vary. You may listen and not see what the problem is. So, anyway, I've got a voice file here from Michael, and he's kind of responding. He had originally sent a voice file talking about the book that I listened to last time from Audible, and I ended up getting it just because he mentioned it, and it was about, he'll talk about it here in the voice file, and it had to do with sort of workplace disruptions and so on and so forth. And so he'll mention the name of it without me having to look it up. He's going to mention it because I can't remember the name of that book either. It's right on the tip of my tongue. So Michael will mention that. So I did listen through this comment. So it's about 7 minutes long. So I'm sure I'll be stopping and responding to it. So here is Michael.
Hey Tom, this is Mike. Hey, I just got done listening to the audiobook. Average is over, and last night on my run, I listened to your podcast, which you responded to said book, and I have a couple thoughts on that as far as our line of work, which is trucking, of course. You know, I listened to your comments about, you know, how you think that, you know, truck drivers won't be, you know, replaced by automation anytime soon. You know, you mentioned backing trailers to tight places, landing gear issues, sliding tandems, etc. And I think those are some valid points. Until the infrastructure changes, I think that there's certainly going to be a need for, you know, us to do those kind of tasks.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and interrupt. Yeah, The Average is Over, and that's actually a very good book. I listened to it twice, because, you know, it was one of those books that it was worth listening to a couple of times, audiobook version. So, in the real world, it's really difficult to control. You've got all these different variables versus a closed system. If you have a closed system, you know, and I don't know if I would, I was talking to this friend the other day, and I may or may not have talked about this in a podcast, but I was talking to this friend the other day that he had retired a number of years ago from Boeing aircraft. Even back then, before he retired, they already had largely automated warehouses where everything was engineered so that they could pretty much put parts into this automated system, and all of these robots would kind of put the thing where it belonged temporarily, and then they could retrieve it after the fact. And there were a few little errors here and there, but for the most part, it worked pretty well. And it was pretty much entirely automated. Now, well, that is a completely closed system where someone can engineer it. And, you know, if you've got a closed system, you can keep working on it until you get rid of all the errors. The problem with the real world is that it's the real world, and you get all these variables. I just don't see the real world being, as it exists right now. I don't see that being, my job is not under a threat right now. I just, you know, now that may change in the future, and I, you know, and you're going to have a hard time getting companies to change because, you know, if it was just one company and, you know, just, or, you know, or just a few, just a handful of companies, maybe you could talk them all into sort of changing their infrastructure. But, you know, you're talking about way more than one, you know, than a few companies, than a handful of companies. Then you got all of these different dock situations, different types of warehouses. You know, and for a human being, that may not seem like much. You know, a dock is a dock, a warehouse is a warehouse. But when you start talking about coding and computers, you know, computers take things literally. I don't know if you've ever, if back in the day, you know, I remember, the first computer that I had was a Radio Shack color computer, and then the first IBM compatible computer that I had was an IBM, you know, some kind of an IBM, like an XT. Uh-oh, phone's ringing. I have to pause this. Be right back. Okay, I am back. My parents called, talked to my mom. So anyway, what I was talking about, the first IBM compatible that I had was an XT, and of course it used DOS. And a lot of people, I'm sure, are familiar with DOS, or Disk Operating System, Microsoft DOS. And so it... you know, you had to type things in exactly. It was pretty literal, and computers really are pretty literal things. You know, they've tried to come up with more sophisticated software that, you know, it's basically a more sophisticated instruction set. And again, if you control the environment, then you've got a, you can have a sophisticated, you know, you can have your sophisticated instruction set, and you can make it where it's close to, as close to perfection as possible. But in the, when you start dealing with the real world, you get into areas that the computer just can't handle. And as good as they try to make the, like the self-driving car sound and so on and so forth, you know, just, you know, what's going to guide that thing? Is it GPS? Do you trust your GPS? Is your GPS, if you're using GPS all the time, which I am, I'm still finding the GPS is off, the GPS has problems a good 10% of the time. It really does. And when you start, you know, relying on that 10%, you know, for one person, you know, and of course I can deal with that. I've got a variety of things I can do, ways that I can deal with that 10%. But it, you start talking about an automation system, you know, some sort of an automatic system, and there's a 10% error rate, that's unacceptable. Then you start, and then further, you start multiplying that by millions of people or millions of self-driving cars. Just a tiny, even if you got that down to 1%, that it would be unacceptable. You'd have an unacceptable error rate. Imagine a car's driving to the wrong place, or driving in circles, or, you know. So there's a lot of problems that must be overcome. Now, some things lend themselves to automation. And a little, you know, when I play the rest of Michael's comment here, he's going to talk about that, you know, how that, you know, some of those things do lend themselves to automation, and that's true. But there are other areas that do not really lend themselves to automation. And some of these predictions that these people make, I don't know if you've ever noticed, you look at science fiction and you look at the predictions people make, not only in science fiction, but... the so-called futurists make, and particularly science fiction. You look at what they sort of envision the future. Oh, it could be this way, or it could be that way, and inevitably, it never comes out quite the way that it was envisioned. the real world is always different than what we imagine it might be. So, you know, it's never the same as what you know, the sort of the idealized version that people come up with.
You know, a computer is just not going to be able to do that sort of work. However, I can see our job is largely being automated. You know, I can see, you know, as far as what were the times of work going down the freeway, for example, I can see that being automated, you know, where we're just kind of riding along, monitoring the truck as, you know, it basically drives itself, you know, and then once we get to the location where we need to do something with the trailer or whatever, then, you know, we, you know, manually do that. But I think maybe the future of trucking could actually be analogous to what a modern railroad worker does, you know, I mean.
Now, see, let me interrupt again. The railroad is a controlled environment. Even though it's the railroad is, you know, it exists in the physical world and it's sort of subject to weather and so on and so forth, it's more of a controlled environment because you've got the track and, of course, people have to maintain the track or the train can derail or you can have any number of things that can go wrong. Because it is sort of in the real world, again, you know, it's subject to weather or earthquakes or whatever. But at the same time, it's sort of a controlled environment. It's not like a highway system. It's, you know, it's sort of a quasi, but it is kind of a controlled environment. And especially like a rail yard, a lot of that is automated, or they've got someone that's sort of doing it via remote control from some control tower. There, a lot of that can be highly automated. A lot of the some of these docks, I can't think of the term where they're, you know, like in Southern California, they've got this port. Is what the word I was looking for. This port, you know, is highly automated. And so you can do things like that where you the automation can, you know, but again, that's kind of a controlled environment. So if you can control the environment, then you can make the automation really work. But in the cases where you can't really control the environment very well, if the environment is too variable, then the automation is going to be much less effective. So, by the way, what you just heard my truck start up. It's cold enough here. It's, I don't know, a while ago when it was 9 degrees when I looked, and I think the area I looked again, it was 5 degrees. It's supposed to get down to minus 3 degrees, actual temperature. And so this truck, one of the differences with this truck is that it's got this auto start-stop. And so once I turn the switch off, I hit this thing, this button, within 30 seconds of turning the switch off, and then it will automatically, that arms the system, and I can take the key, and it'll automatically start and stop the truck based on the outside temperature, based on, you know, basically how cold the engine is, you know, to keep the engine to a certain warmth. So that it'll continue, you know, it won't have any problem starting. And also it would, it could start and stop itself based on the voltage, the battery voltage. Now, the battery voltage is not low enough for the thing to start. So the reason it started now is because it's cold. and it went ahead and started, you know, to maintain the engine, you know, to maintain a certain temperature, not let it drop below a certain temperature where it might have trouble starting. So that actually works pretty well. So it's kind of a throwback to the truck that I just got out of with the optimized idle. This is not really optimized idle. However, it does it, you know, it, and it only works in really cold weather, because even if the temperature was in the 20s, like it was the other day when I went after, right after I first moved into this truck, the thing never did start. The first time that it started was last night. You know, it was in the teens when I got to Wichita late last night. And of course, I enabled the thing, and when I parked, and I was kind of surprised after I was there for about, I don't know, an hour and a half or so, the thing started up. And so, and as I say, it's cold enough for it's continuing to do that. So anyway, let me go ahead and play more of Michael's comments.
For the most part, I'm certainly not an expert on trains, but what I see, well, largely the train, you know, pretty much, you know, there's not a whole lot of driving involved in that. The engineers and the other crew members kind of monitor things as they go down the track, and then when they get to the rail yard or wherever, then they get into motion, unhooking rail cars, hooking up airlines, etc. And I think, I'm certainly not an expert on this, but I think the future of trucking is going to, as I just said, look a lot like what modern railroads look like today, you know. So that's thought number one. The other thing that came to mind, you know, so I was reading this book. I don't have any kids myself. I'm 37 years old, but my sister, she's got two little girls. One's four, another one's two. And I, you know, after reading this or listening to this book, I really kind of wonder what their, you know, what their world's going to look like, you know, and it's going to be much different than, you know, what I saw, you know, when I was younger. And I don't know, I think that, you know, parents today would be, you know, wise to, and, you know, encourage their children to really focus on education and the right kind of education, you know. You know, if the world that Tyler Cohen lays out in the book comes to fruition, you know, it's, if you're going to, you know, it kind of sounds like you're going to have to really, you know, pursue, you know, higher degrees of education to have a, you know, good life, you know, comparable to what today's middle class enjoys, you know. I don't know. That was just kind of my initial thoughts on that subject, you know, from a personal perspective. The, you know, the third thing, I've, you know, been listening to your podcast for a long time, and I, you know, I've heard you say that oftentimes that there's no political solution to, you know, the current problems that we find ourselves in, and you, you know, encourage a movement back to, you know, morality that's based on biblical principles. I guess, you know, that's kind of the way I interpret what you say. And, you know, going back to the book that Tyler Cohen wrote, you know, if what he says comes to fruition, it sounds like largely a lot of the country, you know, the poorer, the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, you know, they're going to kind of be in certain parts of the country, and then the, you know, the people that are in the, you know, upper, you know, ends of the socioeconomic spectrum are going to be in other parts of the country. So, you know, he kind of says that, well, you know, that the people at the lower end of the spectrum are typically going to be more conservative, you know, more, you know, so if you have those like-minded people all living in one area, would that kind of create a sort of renaissance of, you know, conservative values within, you know, that, you know, geographical region, because you have all these like-minded people together, you know, whereas now, I guess, to a certain extent, the population's kind of intermixed, you know, so as far as people's ideologies, you know, and all that, but I just kind of get...
Okay, now let me interrupt once again. I know people use this term conservative values kind of interchangeably with, you know, maybe they mean morality, or what do they mean, or they just mean that you want smaller government. That doesn't necessarily, just because people are, you know, like with Tyler Cohen is talking about, well, people will, if their living expenses change, you know, they'll cut their living expenses and they'll move to cheaper places. And of course, people do that. Or you cut your living expenses. I'm in the process of trying to do that. I have about 2.5 years left on my house if I continue to pay $300 a month extra towards the mortgage. I've got about 2.5 years left, and it's my intention, provided things keep going along the way they are, it is my intention to put that mortgage out of its misery. And while that's not going to drop my housing costs to zero, because I still have maintenance and still got to feed the beast as far as utilities, which, check out the price of propane right now, it's like $4.69, excuse me, it's an absolute insanity, $4.69 a gallon, if you can believe that. So I'm in the process of attempting to lower those prices. So what Tyler Cohen is suggesting, people are going to move to maybe places like Texas, where the cost of living is lower and there might be more jobs and so on and so forth. And he suggests that people that are sort of in the lower socioeconomic end of the spectrum tend to be more conservative, and so therefore these people that move to Texas because they can't afford to live where they're at are going to become more conservative. That may or may not be true. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're suddenly going to find moral values. You know, it's so tempting, and people do it all the time, it's so tempting to think that everything revolves around politics. It does not. Politics is decay. Politics rises out of decay, out of a sort of a decaying morality. Politics sort of rises out of that. And, you know, I was, David, when was it? Yeah, I guess it was yesterday, maybe yesterday morning, Sunday morning. Before I picked the load up, I had to go up to a truck wash up in Lowell, Arkansas, which is just north of Springdale, kind of in between Springdale and Rogers. There's Lowell. And so I went to Lowell, and went to this truck wash, and he washed trailers out, and I was talking to the owner, and he started talking about the price of propane, because he sells propane, he resells it, basically, the bottles, fills bottles, and, for people, and it's going to cost him $4.69 to get his thing filled that he's filling these propane bottles out of. And I said, you know, I told him, well, welcome to Obama land. And he said, boy, isn't that the truth? But the thing is, Obama land, we are in Obama land, call it what you want to. It's Obama land. That's as good as anything, because it really kind of describes what we're in now. Obama land didn't just happen in the last 5 years. Obama land has its roots going back probably to the 40s and certainly the 1950s. And the evidence of it is the 1960s. So Obama land has been brewing for a long time. Obama land has been on the burner for a long, long time. And it's been kind of, you know, cooking away. And, you know, periodically, you know, kind of maybe cooking harder than it is at other times. But it's always been there. It's always been a problem. People have been ignoring it. People have been turning their back on it. People thought, oh, well, it's really a good thing that these things are these moral problems are happening. That's really a good thing somehow. And of course, it's not. People rationalize. Just because people want to rationalize and they don't want to, you know, they want to be able to shack up and do all their things, and they don't want anybody even talking about it because somehow, oh, it's hurting their feelings or whatever. Well, too bad, you know, but we should have been speaking up long before this. It's too late now. We're dangerously close, whether you want to believe it or not, we're dangerously close now to internment camps, probably death camps. We're going to have, we're marching right towards that. Whether you want to believe it or not, doesn't really matter. So anyway, the idea that these people are going to be more conservative, that's not necessarily going to solve anything. You know, people, you know, you're probably just going to have people more divided, and at some point you're going to end up with a civil war. The real problem is our morals. The real problem is where does our identity, where is it really coming from? You know, and a good way to think of this, you know, human beings respond to stories. There's a story of your life, there's a story of my life, there's a story, you know, we respond to stories. And a good way to think of this, who is in charge of your story? Were you born into a storyline? You know, somehow, whoever your parents were or not, whatever circumstances you were born into, you're born into a storyline. Whether you like it or not, you're born into some sort of a storyline. And, you can either say it's a good storyline or a bad storyline. The problem is, you know, you don't have control over that storyline that you're born into. You're just, there you are, you're born into it, and that's that. However, should you resent that storyline? Because that's what people do. Well, you know, I wasn't, you know, I'm mad because I was, you know, was born poor, or I was, you know, I have to work, or whatever it is, or my parents don't like me, or, you know, or my mother doesn't like me, or my dad doesn't like me, or whatever. You know, there's myriad problems, you know, or I'm born the wrong color or in the wrong country or so on and so forth. So we don't have a choice. We're born into a storyline of some sort. Every single one of us. So the question then becomes, do you resent the story, the storyline that you're born into? And of course, we as human beings do. And that's where we make our big mistake. Because that forces us to become externalized. It forces us to sort of take on the story, take on more of the storyline from the outside. Because if we can learn the lesson of not resenting people, you know, it's people, places, and things. It always starts out with our parents, usually, that they fail us in some way. Parents do. So therefore, you know, if you can learn not to resent, then something else, your creator, can take over the story. But, you know, if you cling to resentment, then the story is externally controlled. Someone else is in charge of your story. And that's the problem with too many people in America. Someone else is in charge of the story. All who sin are slaves. Someone else is in charge of your storyline, and they're changing that storyline right now. Whether you like it or not, doesn't matter. You're a slave. So the, you know, the idea, you know, well, maybe people, you know, they move together and they become more politically conservative. That's not going to do any good. The only thing that can change the situation is if we get our, somehow we have a moral revival. And that has happened a couple of times in the past. So therefore, it can happen again at some point. If it's happened in the past, it can happen again in the future. So I don't think we can make it happen. I think it has to be something that sort of spontaneously happens. I don't think it's one of those things that we can engineer. So, but the idea that, well, the poor people are all going to kind of, you know, live cheaply in a small, you know, in an area, you know, like Texas or wherever, where it's, where the living costs are less. I don't think that that's really going to matter a hill of beans. And, you know, the only thing that really, really matters, if we really want to get rid of Obama land, we've got to start where the problem started to begin with. We've got to get our morals back. And short of that, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse, and we're going to turn, we're becoming Hitler Germany. We're well along that path, dangerously close to concentration camps. They're just a few, probably just a few years away. It's kind of hard to predict, but dangerously close to it. And it always goes the same way. You think, oh, we're modern, that can't happen. Oh, the hell, it can't happen. Technology, knowledge and technology have nothing to do with that. These things are human nature we're talking about. Dysfunctional families we're talking about. And it's all of these dynamics. If you want to understand the dynamics, the dysfunctional dynamics that go on in a dysfunctional country, it's whatever can go on in a dysfunctional family, just scale it up. And then you've got all of the principles. And it's very, very simple. I don't know why people have such a hard time seeing it. It's actually incredibly simple. But the problem is you've got to be willing to sort of face yourself. You've got to be willing to face your own dysfunctions and the dysfunctions of the people around you and your own family. And if you can't admit to yourself what these dysfunctional dynamics are, if you can't even admit to yourself that, then you know, how do you have any hope of understanding once it scales up? But it's these things are incredibly simple. You know, they're just as plain as the nose on your face if you're willing to see them. But you have to want to see them. You have to be willing. Not only willing, you have to really want to see it. So, anyway, let me play the remainder of Michael's comment.
The impression that there's going to be more, you know, segregation of various, you know, types of ideology, you know, in different regions of the country. And so it would be an interesting, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that kind of makes sense to you, what I'm saying, if, you know, I don't know. It's just a thought that it kind of crossed my mind on that point. So anyway, I hope everything's going well for you, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you, Michael. So, you know, the point is, you know, and I know I keep going back to it and back to it and back to it, and you're right, it's basically, it's biblical morality. That is what we've fallen away from. And that is the root of our problem. Whether we want, you know, of course, we come up with all kinds of rationalizations why, you know, black is really white and green is really pink and so on and so forth. And it's really okay to shack up. And it's really okay if you kill your baby because it's unwanted anyway. It's unwanted byproduct of sex and it's not going to be happy or whatever. and there's too many people in the world as it is, and so on and so on. And why would you bring another person into this miserable world, and there's no jobs, and the Chinese have all the jobs, and they've taken it all outsourcing and what have you. Which, by the way, I think outsourcing, I was thinking about this, it's actually it's a wonderful thing. It's really good. Because at the time when the propane is going up to $4.69. A friend was telling, that's what the $4.69 a gallon, the so-called propane shortage. So it's a good thing that we have all this outsourcing, because there's plenty of other things that it's really lowered the price of. Just unbelievably, you go into your local Walmart store or a Target store and look at the prices on televisions. It's incredible. Flat screen, high definition televisions. The pricing now is just, every time I see it, it's lower, and it's just, I pick my jaw up off the floor. And so there's plenty of examples of where things are more affordable. And so it's actually quite a good thing that we have all this outsourcing, or we would be in a lot of cases, how would you pay how would you pay for your propane? How would you pay for your utility bill? By the way, I think I'm going to get it's a product I've seen. It's been around for a while. And it's these portable space heaters, and there's this brand name that I've seen, Duraflame, and they sell that at places like Lowe's, and I don't know if they sell it in Walmart, but Lowe's, Home Depot, and what have you. And I think I'm going to go ahead and get one of those. It's a space heater. The model I'm looking at, they claim it's good for about 1,000 square feet. So the idea is you just kind of pick a zone in your house and turn this thing on, and then it can cool, or it can warm up just a specific zone of your house. And the idea, I think I'm going to get one of these with the idea that I'm going to help stretch the propane that I have. I'm going to help stretch that out, because who can afford a $1,000 or $1,200 propane fill up? That's insane. $4.69 a gallon. That comes out to probably $1,000 to $1,200. That's I can't afford that. That's crazy. So I'll come up with some way. I'll devise some method of And besides, who wants to spend that kind of money? Why would you want to waste your money on that? So there are things you can do to, there's things that I can do to mitigate that. So my idea is to cut my propane usage to the bone, make that propane last. The price will go back down once the demand goes away. Of course, it's cold and so on and so forth. And that's, I don't know where this idea of a propane shortage came from, but it's never happened before, and it's certainly been cold in the past. I know the propane has gone up, though, in the past. It's been kind of volatile. It's never been this wild, though. It's never gone up this much. So, I do think I'm going to buy one of these Duraflame. Duraflame. It's a model that they call Livingston. I think I'm going to buy that, and those are electric. They're electric or ceramic or quartz, some kind of quartz something or other heater, quartz ceramic, and I think I'm going to buy one of those and then be able to just kind of have it, and if I need to, I can use it to sort of extend the propane, that I have, that I'm, so I don't have to get the thing filled as often. And then, of course, I'm not there much anyway. When I leave, I turn the thing down on 50 and it doesn't run nearly as much. So I guess, I don't know, theoretically I could get one of these space heaters and just leave it on 50 degrees and sort of move that thing around, but I don't know how practical that would be. And of course, it's going to make the electric bill go up. I don't know by how much, though. But I suspect that the electricity, even the electricity is more expensive than it used to be. I suspect that the electricity would be cheaper than $4.69 per gallon for propane. That's crazy. You know, especially if you go through very much propane. So, so I do think I'm going to get one of those. So anyway, probably better go ahead and cut this off. Need to get headed to bed. And then up in the morning, the place where I'm delivering to is right next door to this truck stop. It's a Walmart distribution center. So 6:30 a.m. appointment. That means they want me in there at 5:30. So I'll have to get up probably around 5 or a little bit after, and then drive next door and check in with them, and then they'll unload it, and then be ready for the next load. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.